This is the Florida Roundup on WLRN. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks for listening this week. 2 years ago, election officials in several Florida counties found emails in their inboxes that could have infected their computer systems. They're called spear phishing attacks. Someone poking at a computer system's security with an email attachment, hoping to puncture through.
In 2016, my office received several emails. They were phishing emails.
That's Mike Hogan. He's the supervisor of elections in Duval County, which includes Jacksonville. They were emails with attachments, emails that pretended to be from a company that provides election software in Florida.
If it was Russians, it was a very juvenile attempt.
A ham-handed attempt,
yes,
to break your system.
That was what was in the news all over the country about this phishing attack, and that's what we actually received here. But took no action on it. There was no breach.
That was 2016. No evidence that Florida's voting system was compromised in 2016, but the attempts to breach systems helped lead to millions of dollars in federal money to shore up election security in Florida ahead of the general election this fall. Mail-in ballots will be sent out in a week and a half. Early voting opens in just 3 weeks from Monday. Election Day, 38 days away now. Sample ballots are set. The deadline to register to vote is October 9th. So are you ready to vote? Is your vote secure? And how could the process of voting encourage more people to participate in elections? What will voters be greeted with at the proverbial ballot box this fall? 800-743-WLRN, 800-743-9576. Your thoughts can also be sent to us via Twitter at WLRN. Three of South Florida's county election supervisors are with us today. Brenda Snipes, the supervisor in Broward County, will be with us in just a moment. Christina White, the Miami-Dade election supervisor, is with us in studio in Miami. And Susan Booker is the same position in Palm Beach County with us on the telephone. Christina and Susan, thanks so much for joining us on the Florida Roundup. Nice to hear from you both. Christina, let me start with you in Miami-Dade County. Can you guarantee votes in Miami-Dade County will be secure in November?
Absolutely. Thank you very much for having me on the show, first of all. But that's a great way to start the show. And absolutely, I want all of our voters to feel very confident, very secure going into this election cycle. Security is something that's been a top priority for all of us across the state since we started doing this job. This is not something new, even though we're hearing about it more and more.
Susan, how about in Palm Beach County? Can you make a guarantee that the voters' ballots will be collected and counted properly?
Absolutely. We have concentrated very heavily on cybersecurity. And, you know, the state of Florida votes on paper ballots. And so we don't ask our voters to trust us. We can prove our votes.
How has the investment and battle around voting security changed in the last, say, 2 years or 3 years, Christina?
Well, like I said, in Miami-Dade, I feel very fortunate because it's a I apologize. It was a top priority for my county forever. So we've invested in this since I've become supervisor and well before that. Yes, I think that with recent news reports, with this phishing attempt and other things that we're hearing about, the state of Florida has taken an interest in this, and there is money that has been dedicated to us, and it'll further enhance what we have in place.
We'll talk about that money and how you used it in a second. Susan, what about in Palm Beach County? Did you receive any of those spear phishing emails back in the 2016 campaign cycle?
No, we were not notified that we received any phishing emails, but, you know, security is always a protection issue that we've looked at. We have a lot of personal data from our constituents, and we've always known that we are a target. And so for many, many years, we have concentrated on security of our computer system. And so this is not really a new topic for the supervisors. It just happens to be a new topic for the constituents, to the voters. And so what I want people to know is that there is no evidence of anybody coming into our system or impacting your vote whatsoever. What we do know is that there was a lot of activity on social media that probably impacted the minds and hearts of some of our voters. But certainly there's no evidence that the election was tampered with in any way in 16 or in any previous year.
Right. And so the issue of security, always something front of mind for election supervisors. Perhaps it's more fresh in voters' minds now, but would you agree that the threats are greater today than they were 3, 4, 5 years ago, Christina?
I think that any government entity will tell you that the threat is there every single day. There are people that are attempting to intrude computer systems for a variety of things, not just election systems. Mm-hmm. But, you know, as I said, in Miami-Dade, you know, just like Susan said in Palm Beach, we have no evidence at all of any sort of breach or
even
attempt.
You never received any of those phishing emails back in 2016 either.
We never received any of those emails. We have a variety of intrusion detection monitoring systems. And so we're constantly looking at it, and we have no evidence of anything like that occurring.
We are speaking with election supervisors in South Florida. That's Christina White. She heads up that office in Miami-Dade County. Susan Booker is the elected Palm Beach County election supervisor. Brenda Snipes in Broward County will join us in just a matter of moments. Regarding election security, federal dollars have been dedicated to this. This summer, the state received $19 million in federal money. Miami-Dade County received, I think, $1.6 million. Palm Beach County, just over $900,000. Susan, how did Palm Beach County use these funds?
Well, we check in voters with mini iPads. When you come to the polls or you come to early voting, you have to present a picture signature ID, and we run it through an iPad to connect to our database. And there are upgrades to our iPads that we needed to make, so we purchased 1,750 new iPads that were able to put a security patch, an Apple security patch on, to update, and each one of those iPads are licensed, encrypted, and downloaded separately. We've deployed multiple iPads to every location, and so if somebody wanted to mess with our database and interrupt an election, they'd virtually have to take out each iPad individually.
Let me get into the weeds a little bit on these iPads, because that means that they are communicating wirelessly with some secure server to ensure that the ID that is presented to the poll worker who has the mini iPad and types in or somehow gets that information in is being verified with the voter roll. Is that correct, Susan?
No, it's not. The database is downloaded to that particular device.
It is.
Before
I see.
The opening of the election.
I see. Same in Miami-Dade County as well, Christina?
Same thing in Miami-Dade. So not only is that information stored locally, and so if some sort of cyber attack was in fact successful, it is not going to impact a voter being able to check in and vote that day. And in addition to that, in Miami-Dade, we also have backup precinct registers. So if for some reason I had to say stop using the electronic check-in system, grab the backup precinct registers, we can continue voting.
What is the backup precinct register? Is that just a printout?
Yes, it's a physical printout of all of our registered voters in the county and which precinct that they are supposed to be voting in. And if they have already voted early or voted by mail, it would also tell us that on the paper backup. So, you know, one of the main things that we will all say in this regard is that we have the paper backup voter rolls. Mm-hmm. And then with the paper ballot that our voters are voting on, really, there is no reason for us not to continue voting. And then we'll be able to go back to that paper and have that as a record of everybody's votes.
Quick question, Susan, about the iPads. Do you disable the Wi-Fi function? Do you put it like in airplane mode or something like that? Or does that exist at all with these kinds of pads?
Well, it gets downloaded before the polls open on election day or at early voting. And the iPads are operated through a particular server that's a standalone server.
Mm-hmm.
And once you download the data, you really don't need to verify anything else. You have all of the data from our database.
Okay.
And so they're encrypted and licensed separately. And we have a policy that if Susan Booker walks into the polls and you can't find my name on the poll book that's being used, you get transferred to the person in charge. If that person finds my name, we will take out the iPad that did not find my name and replace it with a freshly downloaded iPad.
We are speaking with Susan Booker, the Palm Beach County Election Supervisor. Christina White holds the same position in Miami-Dade County. Brenda Snipes is now with us. Ms. Snipes, Dr. Snipes, thank you. Nice to see you. I'm going to have you put your headphones on over there so you can hear your colleague Susan Booker in Palm Beach County with us on the telephone. Brenda, Broward County received just over $1 million of the federal funds through the state this summer for election security. How did Broward County use those funds?
We use the good morning, good afternoon. We use the funds in different kinds of ways. We looked at cybersecurity as well as our physical security. And I think one of the major expenditures that we are encountering is the purchase of the most updated EVET machines. That's the system that we use for like an electronic poll book. And when voters come in to vote, then we're going to check them in that electronic poll book.
So that would be a voter registration system? Is that what that is?
Yeah, it is. It's where our database is stored for access during the election process. But the system, the new equipment that we bought, it has a much more sophisticated and secure program built into it. So we think that's a good choice.
Will those be deployed for the early voting in the November election?
They will be.
They
yes.
will be. Let's talk about how folks vote. And by the way, questions, comments here on the telephone, you can call us 800-743-9576. Speaking about election security, questions about the ballots, questions about registration, the length of the ballots, your experience voting in South Florida. You can also follow us on Twitter at WLRN. A report was released recently from the ACLU Florida that found one out of every 100 mail-in ballots were rejected in Florida in 2012 and 2016. It was a little bit higher in Miami-Dade and Broward County 2 years ago, according to the study. Christina, do you agree with these findings?
I don't know where that data came from or how it was analyzed, so I really can't speak to the results of that study, to be honest with you.
Have you done a similar kind of study?
We did look at it.
And what did you find?
We found that the rejection rate for the presidential election was 1.2%. So what that means is that of...
So one out of every 100 ballots. Those are for mail-in ballots.
Those are for mail-in ballots.
So roughly the same as what this study found, too.
Right.
Yeah.
So, you know, 1.2%, and, you know, I will tell you from my perspective that voters, I think, should be happy about that. I don't really know what the big deal about the percentage is.
Well, I guess the question is, if you vote early or you vote on election day, what percentage of those ballots are rejected?
And so that you're comparing apples to oranges there. When you go to vote early or on election day, you are there in person mm-hmm. with your ID with you. So we know that it is you that is in the act of voting. The way that we confirm that it's you on a vote by mail ballot is by comparing the signature on the ballot to the vote, to the signature that we have on record. That's how we are able to make sure that it was in fact you. That's a protection that everybody should, I believe, enjoy.
But shouldn't voters know that if they vote one way, their odds of having their ballot not counted are, frankly, substantially higher than if they vote another?
Yes, I understand that. And so we're always telling our voters it's very important that we have your most up-to-date signature on file. That's one of the most important messages that we put out there. And then, you know, again, in the last couple of years, the law changed. So we are actually notifying any voter who forgot to sign the ballot or their signature doesn't match, giving you a second mm-hmm. chance to correct that.
Brenda, let me ask you, this study from the ACLU Florida also found the rejection rate for younger and minority voters using mail-in ballots was substantially higher than for older and white voters. Why do you think that is?
I'm like Christina. I haven't had a chance to really study all the demographic part of the data. But I will say that sometimes I think in the eagerness to get the ballot back in, voters may forget to sign the ballot. When we have a voter who does not sign the ballot, we do put the cure process in place, which is to send them an affidavit, giving them directions how to fill out the affidavit and what timeline they need to get it back to us by. Mm-hmm. And I just think perhaps in our busy society, that's something that people overlook, because on our signature line on the return envelope, we have a big red X. We've always been exploring ways to get people's attention. And I think if our voters just slow down, look at that ballot, and it's a ballot, it's at home with you for whatever length of period of time, but turning that vote, that ballot over and looking at that line and just figuring out what it is you're supposed to do. We're helping them by putting the X in there. But in terms of what the category of voters is and how they return their ballots, that's something that we really haven't had an opportunity to study mm-hmm. because this report from the ACLU just came out in the last week or so.
Susan, what about for you? Because there has been considerable resources in terms of encouraging voter participation and the relative ease of use of mail-in ballots for a number of folks. And
well, you're absolutely correct. And, you know, particularly in the general election coming up on November 6th, all of our ballots are huge. We have 12 state questions. I have a county question. I know Miami has a lot more questions from some cities. And so the ballots are very long, and we're encouraging people to either vote by mail and get a ballot 30 days before the election, or we're sending out sample ballots that are very particular so they can study their ballot, the ballots pages and pages long in each one of our counties.
Yeah.
But, you know, what I think is that the law is new. It stemmed from a lawsuit to cure your absentee vote by mail ballot if your signature doesn't match or you don't sign it at all. And, you know, I've seen no effort by the Division of Elections or the legislature to provide voter education. It's been left to the supervisors. Mm. I think here in South Florida, you're seeing a very slight amount of ballots that the people are just not getting the information, or they're ignoring the letters that we're sending them. And I think it's a matter of voter education. I think additional effort should be paid throughout the state, and that's the job of the Secretary of State, and I don't see anything coming out of there.
We've got a couple of questions from folks on mail-in ballots. Tasha tweeted at us, the Miami Herald recently did an article about how mail-in ballots are 10 times more likely not to count due to signatures not matching. She writes, mine has changed since registering at 18 years old. Christina, she asks, how do we update our signatures?
Well, the voter, you have to do it through the voter information card. I'm sorry, the voter registration application. So you can go to our website and print that. You have to, it's an original signature that's required.
You have to re-register to vote? Is that essentially the process?
It's not really re-registering. Okay. It's really just a signature update.
Okay.
It's a record update. So you're going to print the form, fill it out, sign it with your original signature, and mail it back to our office.
David on Facebook wrote us, I've requested a mail-in ballot and read those are not often counted or lost. How can I make sure my ballot is counted? Brenda, what would you respond to David?
You know, I think every time we get into an election season, that's one of the things that we hear. People think that we don't count the vote by mail ballots. Actually, on election night, when the results begin to roll out, the results that first appear on the screen
right.
are from the mail-in ballots.
And then the early voting.
That's right. Absolutely correct. So every vote that's a valid vote, meaning that we've got a signature, meaning that this person is actually a registered voter. Every vote that comes back in that is a valid vote, it counts.
So
it counts.
The takeaway is sign the envelope.
Sign the envelope and get it back in to us no later than 7 p.m. on election night. If it comes later than that, then we definitely cannot count that ballot. So we love the absentee ballot program, the vote by mail program. It's convenient, probably the most convenient way of voting that we have.
Yep.
But if we don't get it back to us during the right time schedule and if it's not completed as it should be, then we're not allowed to make that vote count based on the state
statutes.
It's
not postmarked on election day. It's got to be in the hands on election night. Yeah.
Now, I want to say that, you know, I want the voters to know that all of us can begin counting our vote-by-mail ballots 15 days before the election. And because of the sheer volume that Miami, Broward, and Palm Beach do, we start processing our vote-by-mail ballots first. Those are the first ballots we have in our hands that are voted, and those ballots are being processed. They run through the tabulators, but we don't hit the totals until the polls close on election day. And so that's why we can show a very large number of votes at about 7:30 when the polls close at 7 o'clock. Those are the vote-by-mail ballots that we've been counting for 15
sure.
days.
Christina, quick question, though. If the signatures don't match or if there isn't a signature in a vote-by-mail ballot that you receive, say, on October 30th, will your office send out that affidavit that day, or will you wait until after election day?
Oh, no. We send the affidavit out within a day or two after receiving that ballot.
Okay.
So it's going to give you ample opportunity to fill it out and get it back to our office. The whole point there is to give you the second opportunity to have it accepted.
800-743-9576. Speaking with the three election supervisors in Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach counties. We will begin in Fort Lauderdale in Broward. Mitchell is on line two for us. Go ahead, Mitchell. You're on the radio.
Hi there. How are you guys today?
Doing well. Go ahead with your question.
So one of the fundamentals we're taught in cybersecurity is that no matter how strong the security you make your system, it's only as strong as the people who use it. And one of the things that you said kind of concerned me is that you're downloading your databases locally to each individual iPad, and you have a lot of them. So what is being done to keep people from, you know, people who aren't trained in cybersecurity from accidentally exposing passwords over their shoulder or and losing them?
Good question, Mitchell. How about it, Christina and Brenda? How do you provide that level of training to make sure people are not clicking or downloading some other malware, even unintentionally?
We have a training program that we are consistently putting our staff members through. Anybody who is touching technology is going through the cybersecurity training. We don't personally have those iPads out in the field, but I think the question remains, yeah. Right?
So we're Susan, how do you deal with that?
I got dropped from your call.
Yeah, I did. It was a question about human error on cybersecurity. In the instance of using 1,700 iPads, how do you ensure that those 1,700 people using those iPads are not unintentionally downloading malware if they're, say, playing chess or solitaire or who knows what else may be on that iPad?
We don't have that on our iPads. Our iPads are exclusively for voting and for checking voters in. And so all of the other devices are disabled. We don't need to use those. This is a dedicated iPad that gets a direct download from our database on a standalone server.
So it's impossible to download anything else on that iPad? Is that what you're saying?
We've disabled all of the other functions. We don't need them.
I'm not sure that answers the question, though. I mean, you can download the database.
Uh-huh.
So why couldn't you download the Gmail app?
Because we can see what you're downloading on each one of the iPads. We can see it live on a server, and we don't allow that.
Okay, so it's somebody who's watching that doesn't allow it. It's not that the hardware doesn't allow it. Okay, all right.
Every poll worker is usually really busy. They're just not sitting around, you know, playing games on an iPad.
Yeah, I don't mean
we have, you know, almost a million voters.
Yeah, I don't mean to say that they are. I was just simply using that anecdotally as an example, for instance, mm-hmm. about what else may be on the iPad, for instance, because I think all of us have some experience with those screens and the kinds of things that can be on there. Brenda, what about in Broward County? What kind of protections are put in place or should be put in place to protect against human error when it comes to cybersecurity?
Well, we put a lot of emphasis on training when it comes to dealing with the equipment. And we have programs that we run periodically. They're all done individualized. But we also put protections in place to make sure that they understand the severity of tampering with those systems in ways that are not sanctioned by our office. So that's been ongoing for a while, mm-hmm. and it seems to be working out relatively well, but everybody has to go through intensive training.
We are talking about election security, elections preparation here, as we are on the cusp of those mail-in ballots being sent out domestically within just really a matter of days. Early voting starting in 3 weeks. Election day is less than 40 days away. Voter registration deadline is October 9th. Get election ready here on the Florida Roundup. The three election supervisors from Palm Beach, Broward, and Miami-Dade County are along with us. Your phone calls at 800-743-WLRN. More with our election supervisors here coming up on the Florida Roundup. Again, your phone calls 800-743-9576. More after this. Since the presidential election 18 years ago, Florida has been a punching bag for election trouble. Back then, it was butterfly ballots and dimpled chads. More recently, voter registration rolls, mail-in ballots, uncounted votes, delayed results on election night, all have been the source of some lawsuits, controversy, and certainly some criticism as well. Have you had trouble voting? Have you been a poll worker? What are your experiences during early voting or during election day? 800-743-WLRN is our telephone number to share those experiences with us. What are you doing to get election ready? 800-743-9576, also on social media at WLRN. The election supervisors for Miami-Dade, Palm Beach, and Broward counties are along with us. Brenda Snipes holds that role in Broward County. You've held it for a good long time, Brenda. I want to ask you about some of these accusations because these have been leveled against your office under your leadership. Why do you think the office in Broward County has been subjected to lawsuits and criticisms more than other election supervisor offices in South Florida?
Well, I don't know if I could really answer that question or not because, you know, we don't necessarily do those kinds of comparisons. But there are times when things happen that are not within the plan that you have put in place. And what we do when we have an instance like that, then we want to see where the gap was and see what we need to do to make sure it doesn't happen again.
Give us an example of that, because you know, your colleagues here have faced trouble and accusations and controversies too, but you've been taken to court. Your office has been taken to court on a number of different issues.
We have been taken to court on a number of different reasons. I think we're in a litigious society, and what I see in many instances is when things don't go as a person would like, then their next recourse is to go to court. And I think there are some things that can be worked out short of that, but we go through the procedures.
In terms of things not working out, do you mean election results?
No. Let me give you the most recent thing that had quite a bit of footage in the media, mm-hmm. and that was this past election, mm-hmm. when we had the delivery of vote-by-mail ballots. Vote-by-mail is very popular, mm-hmm. and we would love for every voter to get their vote by mail ballot and send it in right away. But voters like to hold on to their ballots to make sure that they've heard everything they need to hear about a candidate or about a race or about an issue. And so when we receive, remember we're dealing with paper, when we receive ballots at 7 p.m. on election night, mm-hmm. they must be counted, mm-hmm. because they have met the deadline. Mm-hmm. So, but because we deal with paper, you're not going to be able to open and process each one of those ballots in a couple of hours. So in the last election, on both Monday night and Tuesday night, we received a total of about maybe 10,000 ballots.
This was the primary election in August?
Excuse me,
this
yes.
This was the primary mm-hmm. election, okay.
And those ballots had to be processed. We got them before 7 p.m. Would we have loved to get them 3 days mm-hmm. ahead of that? Absolutely.
Yeah.
And that way you can stay on time and processing. So I think there was some confusion among the voters and certainly among the candidates wondering why those ballots weren't counted well in advance.
Yeah.
But we can only count them when we receive them. And if we receive them as late as 7 p.m. on election night, those ballots have met the deadline and must be counted.
There was some previous there was a previous lawsuit over mail-in ballots. A Broward judge ordered your office to change how you handle mail-in ballots, specifically mail-in ballots that should not be opened until the county's canvassing board has ruled on the validity of the ballots.
Yeah, that lawsuit was a little bit on the confusing side. So we have gone back to court to see if we could get clarification on it, and then we just tried to work within the guidelines that the judge set forth. But
is it your understanding that the canvassing board, there's a three-person canvassing board, of which you are one of those three people, has to rule on the validity of a mail-in ballot before you break the seal on the envelope?
If there's no signature, or if we've determined that that ballot, yeah, that happens. So we receive approval from the canvassing board to open the ballots,
yeah.
and I think that's a process that all of us follow.
And is it a unanimous? Since there's three people there, does it have to be a 2-1 vote?
It's
a majority vote, mm-hmm. and you're one of those. Do you think that's appropriate to have the supervisor also a member of the canvassing board?
You know, I think the any person in that position has to demonstrate integrity. They have to show integrity. And certainly that's no different in Broward County. So the supervisors, according to the state statutes, are one of the three members of the canvassing board. So I do think that's appropriate.
For Christina, do you find that appropriate as a supervisor, also a member of the canvassing board that can rule on a validity of a ballot?
I don't have any concerns with that. And it doesn't matter either way. It's in state law, right? So we don't have to like the law, but we have to follow it.
Understood, right. Susan, how about for you? Is that something you think that's appropriate in practice? Susan, are you still with us?
Generally, are the people that know the laws quite well, and we can help guide with our attorneys, yeah. our fellow canvassing board members, towards a law.
Brenda, let me ask you also about another lawsuit regarding voter registration rolls. This was a lawsuit brought by a conservative group, the American Civil Rights Union, claiming that your office violated the National Voting Rights Act of 1993, requiring election officials to keep voter registration rolls updated and accurate. A federal judge ruled in your favor. You won the initial lawsuit. The group is appealing to the 11th Circuit Court. What does your office do to ensure up-to-date voter rolls?
We follow the state law.
Which means what?
Which means that when we take a person off the rolls or when we change the status of that voter, there are procedures that we must follow to do that. As an example, a person may have a felony conviction. When that person registers, and maybe they vote, And we have no information that substantiates the fact that the person has a felony conviction. You can't, there's a process for removing that person from the roll.
Right.
So, you know, you may know that a person is deceased, but until we have records that establish that that person is deceased, which we usually get through the Division of Elections, mm-hmm. then that person is on the rolls. Once we get that, we're going to put a process in place that attempts to contact the family of a deceased person or contacts a person who allegedly has a felony conviction.
How often are the rolls reviewed for validity?
On a regular basis.
Meaning daily.
Daily.
And is it something automatic or is this something that is people-powered?
It's people-powered. We receive information from the state. People register on an ongoing basis.
Sure.
Things change on an ongoing basis. So we do this daily.
Yeah. And would a voter be notified? If they're purged from a system?
Oh, absolutely.
And how
we would have, we don't use purge. We use status change.
Status change.
Maybe we take them from active to inactive.
Okay. And inactive means you're unregistered, you can't
inactive
vote?
Inactive means that your record needs to be updated.
Okay. So you can file
a
provisional
ballot. If we sent out first class mail to a voter and that mail comes back to us, then that says, and maybe it says, insufficient address, or mm-hmm. maybe something else that says this person has moved. So we're going to make another attempt to get to that voter. If we're not able to within a certain period of time and through certain steps, then we're going to change that status to inactive. But if that person shows up at the polling place on election day and they say, I want to vote, and I've moved, and here's my new address, we're able to update the information. We like, of course, for people to do that in advance,
right.
because anything outside of just getting yourself a voting pass,
sure.
it does take up time.
Christina, if a voter in Miami-Dade County shows up to a polling place and they discover that they're considered an inactive voter by your office, what are their options?
Honestly, they wouldn't even know that they're an inactive voter. What happens, so voter roll maintenance is done every single day in my department. And the process that we follow is a little convoluted, but it's in state statute and we all follow it exactly the same. At the end of the day, the requirement is that we contact the voter and confirm that this information is accurate before we remove you from the rolls, because it's just as detrimental to remove somebody that you shouldn't be as it is to leave them on.
And
right?
What's the time period that you're allowed between your notification and if you don't hear back, you taking a change?
There's two notifications that you must do.
Okay.
And then if you don't hear back, then you go into an inactive status and you go back into active status by simply communicating with our department. It could be coming in to vote. It could be requesting a vote by mail ballot. Some sort of communication with the department will put you back into active. The only way that you are what you call purged, or we say removed from the voter rolls,
okay.
is if you stay in that status for two general elections, then you are removed. So that's quite a long time.
So that'd be 2 years then?
It's 8 years.
Two
general elections is 4 years each.
So you could stay in inactive for that amount of time and still go back into active status by communicating. So it does take a long time is the point for that to happen.
Brenda, finally, I just want to ask you, the governor's office had said that it was going to put state elections officials in your office to, quote, ensure that all laws are followed. Were those experts in place during the primary in Broward County?
Yes, they were.
What was that experience like?
It was like giving people an opportunity to see the inside of our elections office. Most people never have an opportunity to do that, so we welcomed them in. They came, and they had lots of questions. They did lots of observations, and I think they learned something new.
Do you expect them to be there in November?
I don't know if they'll be or not, but certainly they're welcome back.
They haven't given you notification?
No.
Christina, Susan, have either of you had state elections officials in your offices during elections?
Of course, it's a regular practice. The governor made a very astounding announcement, but we have people come from the Division of Elections and join us on Election Day on a regular basis. They come to most of the large counties.
Christina?
Yes, I do agree with that. They do rotate throughout the state.
Your phone calls, 800-743-WLRN, three of the county election supervisors here in South Florida from Dade County, Broward, and Palm Beach County. Lots of questions here, ladies. Let's get to it. Marla in Miami on line 5. Marla, you're up first. Go ahead. I'm sorry, Maria. Maria, I'm sorry. I need new eye prescription there. It's an eye there. I apologize, Maria. Go ahead.
Okay. No problem. I want to know if there's any way that a registered voter can double check what his signature on record is.
Great question, Maria. How about it, Brenda? How does a registered voter check to see what their signature looks like on record?
The person can come into our office. We have all kinds of samples, and I think that's important for folks to know that we don't just have one signature replication in our office. We have whatever a voter sends in to us, whatever we collect from them that has a signature, they can certainly we compare all of those.
So they could come into the office and request
Or they can just, if they want to see what it looks like, or if they want to update it. I think Christina addressed that earlier.
Yeah.
We need it in writing.
You mentioned multiple signatures. So if I registered to vote, say, in 2008, you've got that signature on file. And then when I went to go vote in 2008, I also signed the pad. Do you have that signature on file as well?
I don't think we have the signatures from the vote from the pad when you go in, but we certainly have it from the envelopes that you've turned in. We have, if there's mail that you've sent to us, we have that.
You have that as well. All right, Boynton Beach, Paul on line 3. Go ahead, Paul. You're on the radio.
Good afternoon. Yes, a previous election cycle, there was an investigation by the Palm Beach Post on 3 elections of Mac Bernard, Al Jaquette, and I think Christina Romulus concerning possible absentee voter fraud. I was wondering what Supervisor Booker was going to do to alleviate any possibility of absentee voter fraud by candidates and their followers or their minions.
Got it. Paul, Susan, Paul in Boynton Beach wants to know about the possibility of protecting against voter fraud and absentee ballots on the part of candidates.
We sent it to our state attorney, who really did not a lot of things. They really were unsuccessful. But what happens is that, you know, just the same in all large counties, there are people who are paid to go out there and collect ballots. And so instrumentally, the supervisors of elections have passed a law to say that if you are directly paid to go generate and gather vote-by-mail absentee ballots, then you have a limitation of 2 plus your direct family members. Well, if you're a volunteer, it's unlimited. And so what we're finding is that there's a lot of very ambitious people that are volunteers picking up ballots. And so we reinstituted the request form so that if you are somebody requesting for a direct family member, you have to give us all of your information, including your name, your driver's license, and your address. And that way we can track it back. What we thought was happening is that candidates were requesting vote-by-mail ballots for unsuspecting voters and then going and knocking on the door saying, you just got your ballot, you know, I can help you recommend the candidates, complete it, and I'll take it back and drop it off in the office for you.
Christina, in Miami-Dade County, if a candidate requests a certain number of absentee ballots, is there an automatic red flag if they request a dozen or 100? Or is that kind of system built in?
The candidate is allowed to go out and collect vote-by-mail ballot requests on behalf of voters, so that's okay. We do track them. And my most important message to our voters is just don't interact with any candidates or campaigns. Just like you're not involving anybody with your bank statements, why would you give anybody your ballot or talk to anybody about your ballot? So I say make sure that you are communicating only with the elections department. We have postage paid in Miami-Dade. There's really no reason to involve a third party in the process of voting.
We got a tweet from Chris who wrote us, after listening to the segment, I do feel more confident that my vote-by-mail ballot is being counted. I do need to update my signature, as another listener also commented that it has changed since I registered when I was 18. So expect Chris in one of your offices, perhaps, to update that signature. Henry on Miami Beach, you're up next on line 1. Go ahead, Henry. Thanks for your patience.
Sure, sure. I was a voter protection attorney in the 2016 election. It was a function I performed several times over the last dozen years in different elections. And I was in a room with 30 other election attorneys on November 6th and or 4th, whatever the date of the election. And we were interacting with people at the different polling places who would then call us to tell us if something had gone awry with a voter trying to vote and being prevented from doing so. And during that entire day, we were talking to each other as we were, you know, communicating with the people out on the road through our computers. And we said there was something wrong. because the number of voters or potential voters who were being turned away at the polls, this is in Dade County, mm-hmm. was so excessive as compared to years before that it seemed as though, it wasn't the case, but it seemed as though either the poll workers had no idea what the laws and the rules were according to,
okay.
Henry,
let me put it to the election supervisor, Christina White. You were.
You know what? I'd just like to finish the comment that what we determined at the end was that something had happened at the supervisor of election level, and now we know that emails from the bots, from the Russians, had been sent to the supervisors of election that gave them false information, which they then transmitted to the poll workers. And people were denied the vote.
Christina, is that true?
Well, this is the first that I'm hearing of it. I mean, this is certainly something that we would like to hear on Election Day. We have a very extensive troubleshooting network out in the field. So if anything arises on Election Day, my suggestion is that you call into our office right away. I can send...
We were calling in. We were sending it up the line to Tallahassee. We were doing everything we could.
Should it be made to Tallahassee or should it be made to Doral?
Out in the field, problems should be directed to me for the quickest response time. But, of course, that's always an option if you want to send it up to the Division of Elections, of course. But I don't have any information on this. I mean, of course, no voter should ever be turned away. All of my poll workers know the policy is if you can't find them in the voter rolls for some reason, let's say they aren't registered or they registered too late or they are ineligible for some reason, that they are to be given a provisional ballot.
Yeah. Henry, what did these Russian, you were saying Russian bots were sending emails to poll workers on Election Day in 2016 in Miami-Dade?
No. What has now come out is that the bots, that whatever you call those organizations, they might have been sending it to poll workers, but it was more likely it was going directly to the supervisors of election, and they have proved that that they had the emails. They had hacked the emails of supervisors of election.
Yeah, we started their program, Henry. You may not have gotten it. There were a handful of counties in Florida that have acknowledged that they received these malware email attachment.
But those things were transmitted to the poll workers, because we saw it happen.
Right, but what I'm saying to you, though, is all three supervisors here in South Florida have denied getting any of those emails in 2016. Duval County has acknowledged to getting them. I think Hillsborough County has acknowledged in getting them. Correct me if I'm wrong, ladies. Miami-Dade, Broward, and Palm Beach County, none of you, in your estimation, had received any of those spear phishing emails in 2016.
That's correct. And even on behalf of the supervisors that have, it was an unsuccessful attempt.
Right. The election was not compromised.
Correct.
in that regard.
And you know what happens is a lot of times in presidential elections, people aren't registered to vote and they're insistent and they still are able to cast a provisional ballot. We just have to canvass it. If you're not registered within the 29 days, we cannot count the ballot. But during a presidential election, it's common to see a lot of people who are ineligible or haven't been registered to come to the polls and insist to vote a provisional ballot.
Henry, I'm going to have you hold on. If you want to give the producer your phone number, we can certainly pass that along to the supervisor's office. She's nodding her head here as well. So just hold on there. Ladies, I'm going to take a quick break and we're going to talk about the size of the ballot this election cycle. It is another long one in South Florida. That's next as the Florida Roundup continues after this. We're back on the Florida Roundup. Are you ready for the election? An election worker in Broward County, Julie in Fort Lauderdale, has worked at the Lauderdale Lakes Intake Center. She did that during the August primary and had this to say about her experience as a poll worker.
Well, I'm with the League of Women Voters, and we volunteer our time to work the polls. And I had never done this before, so I was a little intimidated by the idea of working in a situation that is so important that I had no idea how to do. But I got there, and the other folks that were there were just super welcoming and sat me down and showed me what I had to do and then worked with me until I got comfortable with it.
That was the primary election. The general election, another beast altogether. It is a long ballot this time around, ladies. Sample ballots are available online, I know. Christina, what should voters know as we prepare for not only a very significant election, as all elections are, but this one, again, a complicated ballot with a lot of questions on it?
Yes, preparing in advance in this election in particular is extraordinarily important. So we all have 12 constitutional amendments on the ballot across the state. But in addition to that, there's a minimum of 5 county questions. And depending on what municipality you live in, you may not have any, or you may have up to 15 additional questions. So in Miami-Dade, you are looking at a 7-sided ballot. So 4 physical pages, okay. 7 sides.
You said 7 sides. I misinterpreted. Yeah. Yes. That's a lot to get through, because those are not 8.5 by 11 pieces of paper.
That's correct. It's a lot of information. So I want our voters to be prepared. You have to educate yourself. Some of these questions are bundled. You're voting on more than one issue at a time. Some of them are lengthy. And so, you know, from a voter preparedness perspective, my suggestion is you go on to our website, you put in very simple information, your last name, your date of birth, and your house number. Your specific sample ballot will come up. We're urging you to print it, make your selections in advance, and if you want to go vote in person at the polls, bring it with you as a guide.
We got a tweet from Raul asking, what forms of identification besides a driver's license can a voter bring? Susan, what's the answer to that question?
The state of Florida is a driver's license, a Florida ID card, a student ID card, a military ID card, a government-issued county, state, or federal ID. It can be a neighborhood ID. You have a lot of flexibility. If you show up in person to vote and you don't have a current picture signature ID, you still vote a provisional ballot, which is a regular ballot, put in an envelope. Certificate is completed, presented to the canvassing board, and if you, in fact, are registered to vote and voted in no other manner, then we open that ballot and count it.
Brenda, Marcos in South Miami, why are people allowed to bother me about their candidates and positions while I wait in line?
You know, voting is a very important process, and so there are procedures in place that will allow voters to be talked to by the candidates, as long as it's not within 100 feet of entrance to the polling place. So sometimes voters complain, but while they're in a line waiting, it is a way for them to get information about the candidates.
We have seen lines that have stretched out in elections past longer than 100 feet out. So you are in that area where campaign volunteers may be talking to you. Brenda, what processes or assurances can you give voters about the possibility of wait times, especially during election day when all the precincts are open, given the size of the ballot this year for Broward County voters?
On election day, we really don't anticipate lines that are going to be that long. And the reason is, you keep in mind that we have 3 ways of voting. And I think our voters are a little bit more prepared for the information that we send out. They know that we're going to send information out. They should read those amendments and everything, be ready when they get to the polling place. But in terms of our studying of what goes on when we do have a long ballot, we are putting in additional equipment. We will have individuals who may not be able to read their ballots well and need assistance. We'll allow them to bring someone in with them, or we'll provide assistance for them. Mm-hmm. We just can't interpret the ballot, but you can read A, B, C, D, whatever it happens to be. So I think we study for those things that might possibly happen.
The additional equipment that you'll put in, is that going to be at specific precincts where you've experienced long wait times in elections past, in 2012 especially?
We study the history of those precincts, and if we think it warrants additional voting equipment, we put it in there.
So how about posting those election results, Brenda? I know Broward County has been a little bit late on election night. I speak as a member of the media that relies on those.
Once we did. The results, we can, of course, post them before 7 p.m., but they come out shortly thereafter. We had some new procedures in place this past election, and I think they were somewhat delayed, but we got all of those votes out there.
Ladies, we have to leave it there, but I thank you, each of you, for your time today. Brenda Snipes is the Broward County Election Supervisor. Susan Booker on the telephone from Palm Beach County, the Election Supervisor there. Thank you, Susan. And Christina White, the Election Supervisor in Miami-Dade County. To all 3 of you, thank you very much for spending time with us here.
Thanks for having
on the floor, Duranda. Much
pleasure.
Appreciated. Finally, next week, we do want to tell you we flip-flop between this program and the Florida Roundup, the statewide edition, beginning next Friday, October 5th. Our statewide program airs at noon. You'll be able to join the conversation with Floridians from Jacksonville, Tampa, Orlando, Fort Pierce, and Gainesville. Then at 1 o'clock, we will focus the Florida Roundup on South Florida with all of your help and support. We do thank you each and every week. The Florida Roundup is produced by Bridget O'Brien. Our engagement producer is Katie Lepre. Our news director, Terrence Shepard. Alicia Zuckerman, our editorial director. Teresa Frontato, digital director. Director of Radio Operations Peter J. Mertz. Director of Radio Programming and Technical Supervisor for this program is Jason Zabka. I'm Tom Hudson. Thanks again for listening this week.